Welcome to the Look Far podcast, Voices from the Wild. Join Look Far Conservation as we talk to conservation leaders from around the world about their work, their life, the challenges they face, and the successes they've had.
I know this place has so much to share and so much things that need to be discovered because it's so far away, and I know it's difficult to reach this place, but having a lot of the best researchers coming to this area, I know it will, all the data, all the connections, all the links between the species that are inside this project will also help us as a Hokotoko team to protect and to, you know, defend the forest and reach our goal of conservation.
Welcome to the Look Far podcast. We are recording this in Ecuador, in the Canandé Reserve, in the Esmeraldas province, here with Fundación Hokotoko, one of Look Far's valued partners in our conservation work. And we are literally today in the Choco rainforest, sitting on the ground by a little stream. Joining me is Martin Schaefer, the CEO of Fundación Hokotoko, and Adriana Argotti, the station manager of the Choco Lab here at the Canandé Reserve. Welcome, Martin and Adriana.
Well, thank you, Scott. It's a pleasure to have you here, and I'm excited.
Thank you, Scott.
So, Martin, let's start with the reserve itself. I was last here in 2017, and then last year we spent a lot of time together on a campaign to protect more of the Choco forests. Tell us, though, you know, here in the Canandé, we're kind of in the heart of the Ecuadorian Choco. What's been happening here? What's new? How are things going?
Well, Scott, since last time you were here in 2017, the reserve has quadrupled in size, so it has grown very strongly. And the key reason for that expansion is that we want to connect our reserve to the neighboring protected areas and thereby create a very large contiguous corridor down from the lowlands of the Choco up to the Andes. And so by now we are protecting around 9,000 hectares. When you were here, it was 2,200. Next week, we're gonna acquire another 900 hectares of forest. And this is really important because the forest is so valuable and so rich in all the species. And at the same time, it is so threatened by deforestation on an industrial scale. And therefore, it is very important to save the land in order to provide a home to the myriads of species that live in this rainforest.
And so for those listening who might remember hearing about the Choco campaign, I think although campaigns like this are always a challenge, a global pandemic does not make anything easier. But looking back, it seems like it's been a remarkable success in terms of enabling and empowering Fundación Hokotoko to further its mission and to protect forest that, if I have my math right, less than 2% of the original forest here in Ecuador of the Choco is still standing. What's left is a lot at the human scale. We walked through a great deal of it yesterday and had a lot more to go. But in ecological terms, in regional terms, it's preciously little. And yet, I think you've taken a big step forward in terms of your efforts to continue to protect the Choco and expand the protections that you've provided already.
Yes, thanks to your efforts, Scott, and all the Look Far team, we were able to develop this campaign last year to save the Choco. And we have seen unprecedented levels of support from people both afar and local, and this makes us really feel very thankful and grateful because it allows us to save this unique place. The people who have been here know how really what a treasure these forests are, and there are so many threatened species, big trees, small frogs, birds, mammals, that call it a home. And many of them do not occur anywhere else, particularly because, as you were saying, Western Ecuador lost way more than 96-97% of its forest. And so this is one of the, and perhaps the only last area that still has an intact forest matrix. And the surrounding forest here are, as you were saying, large on a human scale, because it takes us a long time to even, you know, walk through a tiny part of it. But at the same time, it is so important to keep this one area intact, because it is the home to, say, you know, the last population of jaguars west of the Andes in Ecuador, the last population of their prey, the white-lipped peccaries, the last site where two species of wonderful magnolia survive. And I could go on, but it would be a boring podcast. The key thing is, this area is vital, and it's vital that we are able to maintain it in its wild state.
So, Adriana, one of the things that to me is so distinctive about Hokotoko's work is that scientific research is really at its core. Whenever Hokotoko plans a conservation activity, there's always a strong scientific basis for it, cause and effect. You know, based on science, if you do these things, you are likely to get certain results that are good for ecosystems. Hokotoko also has, I know, worked very hard to engage the communities in which it operates, that it's not just about species, but about people. And the balance of sort of science and community in its conservation work is something that I've always been struck by. As the station manager at Choco Lab, I'm wondering if you could tell us, well, first a little bit about yourself and your background, how you found your way to Hokotoko, and then what you're working on and how that's going.
Thank you, Scott. Well, I'm a biologist. I'm a passionate biologist. I studied my undergrad in biology in Quito, Ecuador. Then I fell in love with insects. I'm an entomologist. I love bees, but among all insects, I love all of them. That's why I decided to go to the U.S. and I study my master's degree in crop and soil science, but I got the major in entomology. And the major was based on pollination biology. When I came back to Ecuador, I started doing basic science mostly. Basic science is when you had a question and then you do basic analysis of data, you collect data, and then you publish those data in a scientific paper. But the first time I came to Canandé, was an assistant of one of the PhD students that are now involved in this German project of the Choco Lab. And it changed completely my mindset, how the park guards work together. Park guards are people from the community areas around here, and they are so lovely. They know a lot about the forest. And I really love this interchange, this connection among them and science at the same time. I think that's why I fell in love with this place. And, you know, life has its ways. And the first time I heard about the need of a station manager here in Canandé, I was working at a university. I was teaching biology in one of the universities in Quito. And I said, no, I don't want to do basic science anymore. I want to have this community engaged. I want to teach common people the importance of the area where they live, because the Chocó is basically one of the prettiest and very special forests in Ecuador.
That's great. And then as the station manager of the Choco Lab, tell us about some of the work that you've been engaged in specifically. And then after that, I have one more question about honeybees and how they communicate. But we'll save that for the end.
Okay. Well, right now as a station manager, my duty is to organize all the researchers that will arrive to the Choco. There's around 12 PhD students plus their PIs and several universities, Ecuadorian and German universities, are involved in this project. So one of my, it's a challenging work, but I really love it because I want to learn a lot about what are they doing, learn about their research, because I know this place has so much to share and so much things that need to be discovered, because it's so far away, and I know it's difficult to reach this place, but having a lot of the best researchers coming into this area, I know it will, all the data, all the connections, all the links between the species that are inside this project will also help us as a Hokotoko team to protect and to, you know, defend the forest and reach our goal of conservation. So what should I do? What I do is help the students with the logistics, with accommodation, organize them, tell them how the forest is, where they should go, how to take care of themselves as well, because you know this forest is so special that we are also in a hot spot of the most venomous species of snakes. But it's part of the adventure, I think.
And so right now, how many scientists do you have here at the station doing research? And then how many are going out like in the middle of the night when all the particularly dangerous creatures are out and about?
That's funny, because they are biologists. They are specialized in, for example, plants or moths or any animal, but they like to take photos. So I have right now around 12 researchers among students and their main professors. But I could say that every night they are going out just to take pictures and to look for what surprises they can find in the forest.
That's great. That's great. Martin, I want to come back to something that we've been talking about a lot. And it sounds cheesy, I think, until you stop and stand still and you hear the sound of a truck heavily laden with logs rattling along the road just outside the reserve, headed toward the river crossing and on to market. And you realize just how precious and precarious the situation is, and how important it is to that you're here, and how much hope that gives to the people at Hokotoko, at Lookfar, the scientific researchers, and others here and beyond. So I'm wondering if you could share with us your thoughts on what gives you hope and what that means to you.
Yes, Scott, this is a really good question. We have a lot of hope because we see what we can accomplish as a team here, Hokotoko, and as a team of very dedicated people on the ground, the park guards, Adriana. There are a lot of people involved in this project. And what gives me specifically hope is that throughout these forests we see how resilient they are and how they recover. And so this science project that Ariana was telling you about is so important to us because it shows the resilience and the recovery of the rainforest. And the wonderful thing about working in these places in the tropics is not only that they are so species rich, like we have on 1 hectare here, which is 100 by 100 meter, about, you know, the same number of species of trees that we have in all of Europe. But the other wonderful thing about it is that they also grow very quickly. So whenever we buy a pasture that has been abandoned by people, because it's very tough to make a living out here in this remote place, then after 5-6 years, you see the trees coming back, and, you know, really trees. I mean, the quickest growth of trees here is up to 6 meters in a year. So that's nothing we can really fathom and believe from coming from temperate areas. But it gives us a lot of hope. So I'm coming back to this place now for a very long time, and I've seen how the forest has become better and improved. And I remember, you know, getting through a specific property that we bought maybe 15 years ago, and you know, the sun was burning down on us, and now you go through that property and you are in a forest. It's a young forest, but it is a forest. And so I think what gives all of us hope is that we can see how much we humans as a team can accomplish in how little time. And I think that is a very important message also to spread, because very often you find people being frustrated and being depressed and have a lot of anxiety about climate change, about all that we are losing. And at the same time, I think areas such as the reserve here give us a lot of hope of how much we can let nature heal itself if we are just able to protect it. So we don't have to do much. We don't even build fences. We hire the local people and they patrol the area. They talk to the neighbors. They explain the importance of the trees as a green lung to all of us as a society, even those who don't care as much about conservation and biodiversity. And then being able to see changes, not within a lifetime, but within 5 to 10 years, is something that is really rewarding.
And Adrian, how about you? You've shared a little bit about it already, but when you think about the work you're able to do with Hokotoko, what to you gives you hope, and how do you share that hope with those around you?
Wow, there's lots of things I can think right now about hope. Hope because there are people all over the world that really takes care of this small area that is in my country, which is the Chocó. It's, as Martin said, is one of the threatened areas. It's so special. It has so much diversity, so much things we need to discover yet. And that knowing that our people all over the world and with the power that wants to protect this area gives me a lot of hope. Not as only as an Ecuadorian, but as a researcher as well, because sometimes you can read papers in certain languages, but those important data, those important things about water, about health in the forest, or medicine that can be in the forest, are not transmitted to the communities. And what Hokotoko does is having this connection of conservation and teaching the people around how conservation is important and why. So for me, that's hope, because science doesn't have to be in just a paper. It has to be shared.
Thanks for that, both of you. So as we wind down, I wanted just to try and, you know, draw attention to where we are. To me, place matters an awful lot. We've now done, I think, 13 podcasts where I've been sitting at my desk, connecting to people on Zoom who are often sitting at their desks. Right now, we're sitting on the ground on some moss-covered rocks. We're all wearing rubber boots that are caked with mud. There's a little stream not too far off. You can hear some birds. The sun is still high in the sky, but it's almost dark here in the forest because the canopy has grown so tall and so thick. And I'm eager to play this back and to hear just how much the microphone picks up around us, a lot better than the background noises from, say, my office at home. And yesterday we had the chance to spend all day in the forest. And as much as it was a hike and a chance to reconnect with nature, I also like to consider it a really important part of this kind of work because of how much we were reminded just how incredibly fragile these ecosystems are, and also how complex they are. Seeing trees that have grown together in the canopy like puzzle pieces, each seeking out just enough light and then leaving space for others. Seeing a palm frond growing out of a seed pod that was decomposing because it was the most nutrient-rich place it could find on the forest floor. It's remarkable. We didn't get very far, even though we We walked for a good 8 or 9 hours. But I feel like even in just that small transect, you could spend a lifetime studying and probably find new species not yet described by science. So really remarkable. I'm deeply grateful and look forward to this reconnection, powering more work with Hokotoko and finding other ways to share what you're doing. And so, Martin, to close us out, wanted to say thanks and see if you have any final thoughts.
Yes, thank you, Scott, so much for coming out here in the first place with your team. But I think I'd like to emphasize just one take-home message. What we need to do as humans is really simple. Protect the land and then let nature run its course. And then we get this wonderful rewilding that is going on its own. And there is nothing else that we need to do. So it is really simple. And the beauty is in the simple things. Thank you.
Thanks, Martin. And Adriana, I said I would have one honeybee question for you before we left. You are an expert. So I learned earlier that honeybees are very good at communicating among bees and among insects. And there are three things in particular that they communicate especially well about when it comes to food. And I'm wondering if you could refresh my memory, because I know you told me earlier today. And also, I just want to have a permanent record, because I think everyone should be as good as a honeybee in communicating information like this.
So, Scott, bees are one of the most evolved groups among insects because they have sociality, you know, sociality. They have this queen and the workers and all that. So they have developed the most interesting communication among all insects. So they can communicate distance, quality, and quantity of food.
That's great. I can only hope I can be as effective in communicating such basic but vitally important information. So, Adriana and Martin, thank you very much. We're going to close with just a little bit of quiet time here in the forest and look forward to getting back on the Look Far podcast with more from our travels in Ecuador sometime soon. So thanks again, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
LookFar is a US 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to defending wild and wondrous places and working with the people living in and among them. More at lookfar.org.